Hello, this is Nathaniel from the Film Experience. This is a little deleted scenes from our last podcast, which we went way over time. So this is Nick Davis and myself again, and when we last left off, we were discussing Star Wars: The Force Awakens, and Nick was saying how much he enjoyed the 3D. And so we'll rejoin our conversation there. We'll be talking about The Big Short, as well as the foreign film finalists.
I would not, if I may bluntly segue, have wanted to see The Big Short in 3D.
Not even the bubble bath scene with Margot Robbie.
Not even that incredibly essential, well realized, fully incorporated moment.
I hate to be such a curmudgeon about this movie because I. The boyfriend loves it, and like a ton of like critics I respect love it, but I just don't think it's very good.
Yeah.
I get that that it's a smart angle on a really dense topic, but that's about as far as I can take it. Like in concept, I think it's smart.
I feel similarly measured. Like, I feel like if this is the style and the register you've decided to embrace, and if you're just going to count on us to accept your cosmetic gestures to, granted, the protagonists of this movie are also villains, but that's okay. Like, I know you don't like me right now. Like, you're right, I don't. But if you kind of grant all those premises, I was kind of impressed that it at least tried. And Derek and I were having a debate as we were leaving it, because that was the other movie he wanted to see. About, I felt he just resented that it was structured as anything like a comedy, and felt like that Inside Job and those kinds of movies really just are so much better suited to getting this information out, especially since The Big Short is just so openly expository of trying to teach the audience what happened in these long, chunky monologues where somebody goes, "Wait, but what happened next?" CDO, can you say that again? Yes, we'll spell it on the screen. CDO. But I felt like America has many times indicated, not just at the movies, but certainly at the movies, that it is unwilling to sit there and learn about this. And it just feels like such a market necessity that if you really want to reach anybody who hasn't already read a lot about this, that mass market comedy may be the vessel you have to use, and that's going to involve some compromise, but and we disagreed about that. But so I did kind of admire it within the parameters that already felt kind of pre-polluted to me, I guess. But I also have a trigger around, like, I'm not a Daily Show fan. I feel like for 10 years, this idea that sort of progressive journalism or politics has to also entertain you or be funny. Like, why? And it just feels like it only reinforces from both sides that people don't really want to the news to be boring, and maybe sometimes the news should be quote unquote boring. So this feels like a culmination to me of where a lot of sort of snarky, oniony, daily showy impulses have been going for a while. So here we go.
I totally see that. That's a more thought out critique than mine, which is basically like it felt sloppy to me. I don't know, sloppy, that seems like an ungenerous word. I mean, I get why people like it. I couldn't really respond to it, and I thought the its attempts. I actually have this. I should preface this by saying I actually have this problem with a lot of contemporary comedy that it seems like it's one thing to be funny. It's quite another thing to be funny and then think you've earned like really, really dramatic arcs. And it mars so many comedies from like comedies that are already terrible. Like a perfect example would be like Melissa McCarthy's what was that called?
Tammy?
Tammy and the one Identity Thief, where it's like this really, really broad ha ha ha, and then you're supposed to be invested in like these sort of like deep, like, oh, this character's struggling with this, or now they have to go to jail for the, like, I can't. Like, you have to earn it. Like, a great example of something earned would be the dramatic arcs of Bridesmaid. It's consistently hilarious, but even within the jokes, they're earning the drama. And it's like, you can't have both to me unless you are working just as hard at both, you know? And this felt like the Steve Carell stuff, especially to me, felt really like tacked on from a different movie.
The stuff with his brother
And his
specifically.
wife, and like I just hated every scene, and like and it's not ha happy for me when Marissa Tomei is on screen and I'm not enjoying it. But yeah, I really, really, really didn't get like the sort of makeup and hair and costuming choices, which felt very like trying really hard to be period, even though it was so recent, the story. Like, that kept taking me out of the movie. I was like, why is Ryan Gosling's hair weird? Like, why is Steve Carell's hair big? Like, I couldn't.
Why is Brad Pitt a Wookiee? He was the only person in the movie I thought was bad.
Oh,
Just at the
really?
level of as a performance, that seemed bad to me. And also, like, maybe Plan B should rethink the at some point Brad Pitt shows up
To
and
save
is the white conscience. Like, okay.
the
And even the Finn Wittrock, John Magaro sort of third strand. I was debating whether the movie could have just lost the two of them. But then I guess that was my experience of the movie that many, many, many times during that movie I feel like I'm in the presence of someone or something that feels like it could have been extraneous. And very seldom did I feel like, well, this is crucial. But then that was the character of the movie to be excessive and sort of diffuse. So then I'd find myself going with it. And I actually, as much as we've been saying about comedy, I was a little bit surprised that it wasn't more farcical. Like its own status as a comedy feels pretty tempered to me, even though I laughed a fair bit and it was clear the movie wants you to. But this and Joy could has you know I know everybody's talking about how The Martian's not a comedy, but really any of them could have been pushed over to drama if you want to think that way pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have that big of an issue with The Martian as a comedy.
I don't either.
But I get what you're saying.
They all just seem more like limit cases, and that was a surprising way to direct The Martian to me, to have it halfway between drama and comedy. I just wasn't anticipating that, but these two, I think I was expecting a more full out comedy from The Big Short, and it often didn't feel that way to me.
I could see that. I mean, I mean, I guess I thought it was funny on occasion, but there was, yeah, I mean, my problem with it was really completely the mix of tones. I just didn't go, I thought the acting was in a very strange register for how like, get it? Here's a celebrity cameo. It was like four different movies to me.
And like, here's a cameo by a working class person. Oh, I pay my rent. What do you mean? Huh? Oh, this is all gonna land on me. Anyway, like that just took me back to an up in the air place of we want this to be about the zeitgeist and about how things are for real people out there. Just don't ask to meet any of them because we don't have a lot of time for that. George Clooney's going through a thing. And this seemed even starker. Like, either set the movie up as a kind of locked room among profiteers, some of whom judge others more harshly, and that's the movie we're in, or actually, deal more cross-sectionally with the exact people you keep invoking in dialogue as the real victims of this. But this whole, like, we're going to meet one of them and then later see them at a gas station felt like you truly can't imagine these lives, can you? Or.
It's a little commentary from very, very well off people making a movie about people struggling.
Yeah. And I get that it doesn't want to be 99 Homes, but maybe just don't go there.
What did you like about it? We've been harsh on it. Or did you not like anything about it?
No, I mean I kind of did. Like it did feel like a different way to make a movie. It felt sort of like accelerated hyperactive PowerPoint in some way, which I sort of admired. Like I can't formally, I can't think of a lot of other recent movies or really any movies that remind me a lot of it. It did feel.
Well, don't you think it was borrowing heavily from Wolf of Wall Street?
I didn't actually,
No?
because I
Okay.
didn't.
I think maybe breaking the fourth wall constantly was my trigger for that. And
Okay.
I don't like to be reminded of Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
But even given the reminder, and I was not a fan of Wolf of Wall Street,
Right.
Scorsese has a lot surer hand of tone than Adam McKay. So even though I get I didn't respond well to it. I did like some of the performances within it, but in very sort of small ways, you know. Like, it's funny that you say to jettison the John McGarrow and Finn Wittrock stuff, because that was probably my favorite
Oh, is
stuff.
that right? Okay.
Just because it didn't feel like it was trying as hard to be like, we are a serious but funny picture of this crisis, you know. Like the Steve Carell, like Christian Bale, like, you know, that sort of like an Oscar nominee takes on the financial crisis, and he has issues either because of his glass eye or because of his dead brother. Like, I thought Finn
So
Wit
we are flipped then, because I liked Christian Bale probably by far the most. And mostly just because I felt that he had devised such a weird way to be on screen that was not easily readable as charming, certainly, or heroic or villainous, or he wasn't sort of throwing tone at me, which I feel like in one way or another most of the movie is doing at different times. And so I actually just had to track his scenes to figure out what was going on and how I should think about it. But
I did like his sort of central dilemma a lot. Like, knowing he was right, but the world conspiring to pretend he wasn't for so long, and the sort of fallout from that was, I thought, an interesting part of the movie.
And the sheer amount of kind of aloofness and savantness you have to even engage with these things in a clear way, like that without that dogged and maybe even limited an emotional range, you maybe can't see how the market works. Did I need to hear that much death metal that many times? No.
But if you hadn't been hearing it, would you have appreciated all the sort of cutouts to everything else? I was like, it's like Ray of Light music video as a treatise on the housing crisis, or it's like an Inconvenient Truth on cocaine or something. Wait, you're done with that slide. Now we're on to this.
And, I didn't understand even some major things, like, what did I know from a CDO? So, as much as the movie was sometimes klutzy in how it decided to dispense information, I was right there to get it, Great, thank you, Selena.
Actually, though, I will say, those scenes didn't always work for me, even as they were intended, because I still didn't. This probably says more about me than the movie, that I'm just really bad with like mathematical stuff. I just still had no idea what Selena was trying to tell me. Whereas like the Margot Robbie stuff made total sense to me, but maybe it's because like Margot Robbie's a good actor and Selena Gomez is not. I don't know.
There is that.
Yeah, I mean even that. I mean I'm notoriously dense when it comes to math and numbers. So those things are a little hard to follow. Like when they're betting against like things, even that I was like, but who are they betting for and where does the money come from to pay them? Like it just seemed like it seemed like gambling to me. Just like straight up like going to like the blackjack table or so. Whatever. More than it did sort of a financial industry, or maybe the financial industry is just a big casino.
It would appear.
Because I didn't even understand who would be paying something out to short something else that was theoretical. Like it was very theoretical for me to involve actual billions of dollars.
It took me quite a while just to get used to things like short as a verb. Like, what? What is. I need a different actor to explain that to me. Like, is Tobey Maguire around or something and he could just tell me for a second what that is? But again, these are maybe our own failings.
Oh, speaking of like of learning things at the cinema.
I'm so glad you didn't say speaking of Tobey Maguire. I got really nervous there for a second.
I did think about him once during The Revenant for some reason. Maybe so there were these long stretches where you just have to contemplate, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio surviving.
Oh God. That always leads to me contemplating me surviving and getting increasingly pessimistic, but okay.
That, you know, so my mind sort of naturally, you know, drifts to Tobey Maguire and Lucas Haas and that whole gang. Oh, Lucas Haas has a cameo in the movie, by the way.
Oh God. Okay.
Because they got to stick together.
Thanks for exciting me so much about it.
Oh, so what was like? Oh, so learning new things. So, we've joked about this before that people get really mad at you sometimes on the internet for using words that they don't understand. And just like, yo, who are you trying to impress? And I was like, no, it's because, you know, we've had that big conversation. No, it's because specific words have specific meanings. So sometimes you need a super, super ultra specific word that doesn't come up in daily conversation to explain something. But I have to admit that, you know, I often learn words from you that I didn't know, like cloaca or cloaca.
We're doing that thing again. We're going to take out the podcast on praising me. I can't believe it. I love it.
But so your Twitter review of The Hateful Eight, acid etching of USA as cloaca?
Yeah, so a cloaca is this is so
Of
gross.
bigotry and violence.
I just
Anyway.
apologize to everybody, but it is for birds and reptiles and I think fish and just a few mammals, you piss and shit out of the same place. That's a cloaca.
Right, and so I looked that up, and then I just started laughing because then the review made so much more sense. But I never would have, you know, understood what you were saying if I hadn't looked that up.
Well, stick with me, you know. I'll teach you some new words for
And
your
suddenly,
excretions.
and suddenly, I wanted to use it to describe so many movies.
Yes. But maybe really especially that one, which we'll get into next time, from what I understand.
Yeah, we have to have Joe around for that one,
Yeah,
because
okay.
we know he has feelings about it.
Oh, you do. I didn't know, but now I'm anticipating it.
Yeah. I mean, I have very, very strong feelings
I remember your hated it, hated it, hated it, hated it, hated it, hated it,
Yeah,
hated it,
my
hated it.
very articulate review of
I loved it.
it. You loved the review or the movie?
The review.
Okay. Coming soon on the Film Experience Podcast.
That's right.
Oh, one thing I did want to talk to you about, since you go to a lot of festivals as well, is the foreign film finalist list, because we haven't talked about it yet.
Oh, yeah.
So, Hungary's Son of Saul, Denmark's A War, Colombia, Embrace of the Serpent, Ireland's Viva, Finland, The Fencer, France, Mustang, Germany, Labyrinth of Lies, Jordan, Thebe, and Belgium, The Brand New Testament. So those are the nine, so four of those will get dropped for the Oscar nominations. But what, how many, which ones have you seen?
I've only seen two, and usually I've seen a lot more than that, but just Son of Saul and Mustang.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen Denmark's, Colombia's, Ireland's, France's, and Germany's, but I haven't seen Hungary yet. And I have been trying, trust me. But you know, during the holidays, like, it's really hard sell to get people to go to a Holocaust movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's Christmas. I really need to see this Holocaust movie. And my friends are looking at me like, you are an insane, disgusting person. And I was just like, but it's gonna be nominated for Oscars, and I still haven't seen it. I could not get anybody to go. I tried several times.
I'll say I was really glad that I saw that by myself. Although I befriended a Torontonian in the seat next to me, which I also was glad that I did. But it was just so emotionally wrecking that I was glad I just didn't have any social occasion to manage at the same time. Like, I just wanted to be by myself and cry.
Well,
So
of
which is your favorite of the other? I know you love Mustang, but I don't know what your thoughts are on the other ones.
Embrace of the Serpent and Mustang are, if they don't nominate either of those, I'm going to be completely pissed.
Okay.
I love both of those movies. They're both just mesmerizing to me. I think Denmark and Germany, they definitely have their appeals, but they're very sort of traditional films, about very traditional topics like war and what war is like at the home front, and you know, post-Holocaust, you know, sort of reflections on the Holocaust. In the case of Germany's movie, and I have also seen Ireland's Viva, which is one of those strange examples in contemporary Oscar races for foreign film, when the rules have significantly changed since when I was a kid. So now you can have a movie from set in Cuba, starring all Cuban people entirely in Spanish, and have it be submitted by Ireland. Because the director and the writer-director is Irish. And
Much like
that.
your Turkish-French movie.
Right, yeah, much like the Turkish-French movie. And Viva's good. It's very. I don't want to. Oh, I don't want to badmouth it because I enjoyed it a lot, but it's very sort of mainstream accessible in what it's doing, you know, sort of like a young boy who wants to be a drag performer, and his sort of very difficult relationship with his ex-con father, who is not happy that he's working at a drag club. So, I mean, it's very sort of like, I think people will like it across the board because it's sort of an easy watch, but like sort of very safe traditional filmmaking type of thing. But the arcs are very sort of clean, and you know, I enjoyed it.
Did you ever see A Hijacking by Tobias Lindholm, who did A War?
I did not see that, no.
Okay. I really liked that one. Not sort of, you know, 10 best level or anything, but it was such an, especially coming out right on top of Captain Phillips, it was such an interesting delivery of a similar story as just about negotiating. And really even tempered and subtle. I've been curious about this one.
It's good, and it definitely has like it's definitely one of those like war, dealing with like the emotional fallout of war stuff that's not, that's pleasantly, you know, I don't want to say progressive, but pleasantly like non war manliness, you know, like it doesn't get any sort of like mixed messaging going on, like about being, about wanting to, you know, be very excited about how manly men survive such things, and also, you know, condemn war. It's very sort of like level-headed, and but that's what surprised me a little bit about it being so popular, is it's very sort of low-key. Which that's what surprised me most about it. It's like a lot of it takes place like just in Denmark, you know, at home and dealing with like the wife whose husband isn't there and the husband coming back and having all these like issues, not non like you've seen it, not issues you've seen a million times like PTSD, but like just dealing with fallout of like relationships from and decisions made in the war and all that. But I was just surprised because it's a little like, I don't want to say slow, but just like a little low-key measured. As opposed to exciting to watch, you know. Whereas Embrace of the Serpent and Mustang for me were both just completely like exciting to watch. And I haven't seen Belgium, Jordan, or Finland.
And was the second mother kind of the top of your list of things you thought would qualify that didn't?
Yeah, for the top nine. Like I wasn't really positive it was going to get nominated, but I thought it would make the top nine. But then on the other hand, like the executive committee this year, it's really hard to look at this list and know what they saved. Because I thought, like, for sure The Assassin would make it just because it's so critically loved. But then I always have to remind myself that Oscar, for whatever reason, just is not into Asian cinema.
Never, ever, ever goes there.
And I thought the executive committee might save A Pigeon Sat on a Branch, but they didn't save either of those two. So I'm assuming, based on things I've heard, that Belgium was one of the saves, just because it sounds so weird.
Oh, I've heard it's kind of a crowd pleaser, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think I heard that at Cannes. I'd been assuming that Thebe was probably a save.
Yeah,
I
but
don't know
I've heard
why.
that's a crowd pleaser too.
Oh, well, maybe everybody agreed and they had the same list. Let's assume they didn't save The Fencer, from what I can tell.
That's the thing, is like all of these seem like, from at least from what I've heard of the ones I haven't seen, it seems like it's, I don't know, it's hard to know what they saved this year.
I've gotten the impression that Embrace of the Serpent was kind of esoteric, but is that not true?
I mean, it is, but it's so hypnotic that I would be surprised if it didn't have a lot of people who loved it just point blank, you know? It is a little weird, though. I mean, it's a little abstract in parts. But I was a huge fan of it.
Just since you did so much coverage of this field, as you always do, and you're so wonderful. Is there anything else that didn't qualify that you want to make sure people still seek out? Because I know it becomes really hard to see a lot of these movies if they don't get nominated.
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly, a lot of them got releases this year, but they were like kind of like releases, like Spain's Flowers, for example, which was their first submission in what's the language? It's not Spanish.
Catalan?
Yeah, maybe it's Catalan. But anyway, like that was released, but like for a week, like I don't know anybody who saw it, you know, type of thing. So a lot of things did get releases this year, but I would definitely tell people to check out The Second Mother because it's very good. I wrote sort of like that I'm not exactly pleased that I saw it, but I get why people think Chile's entry is amazing. The Club, I just found it very difficult to watch. It is like really in your face, unpleasant.
So brutal, yes.
But I mean, I get why people think it's great. I just barely could make it through because it was just too much, you know. It was, yeah, brutal. I thought for LGBT fans of LGBT cinema, they should probably see Sand Dollars from Dominican Republic,
I agree.
which really good Geraldine Chaplin performance and really sort of interesting take on what do you call it, like, colonialism.
Snap, sex tourism and
What were the, there's another LGBT one that people should see
I
for
wasn't
sure.
as crazy about Sanyo, but I know some people definitely like it a lot, the Greek one.
That one I didn't see. I thought Thailand's How to Win at Checkers was interesting for, I mean, it's kind of, again, very traditional filmmaking, like it doesn't reinvent any wheels.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like how it is gay themed, but gay themed in the way that like post-gay world might be, and that the lead character just happens to be gay. And so his relationship with his boyfriend is part of the plot, but it's very, very sort of incidental. Like they could have easily have just been in a script, one change and they could have been like best friends or something. Which I like seeing that once in a while in movies where the gay stuff is just completely beside the point. What else did I? Oh, obviously, A Pigeon Sat on a Branch, I think it's amazing. And as I recall, you like that, but not as much as his previous work.
Yeah, which is saying a lot because I really like Pigeon a lot. Although most of my favorite vignettes were in the first half, I think.
In the first half of the movie. Okay. And otherwise, like, I wasn't crazy about Excanule, but I think you loved it.
I did love
The
it.
Guatemalan movie. I definitely thought it was like an interesting watch, but it was really slow for me. What did you love so much about it?
Partly that I felt for a while that some pretty stark contrasts between the rural and the urban, or the sort of indigenous and the modern, were just gonna keep getting underscored. And then you keep realizing that the seemingly sort of backwater characters actually understand a lot about how the world works, and that this girl who you think is starting to be unreliable as a reader of her own experience, actually totally is onto things that I didn't even entertain for a moment might be true. And just it's hard to say it without giving away some things that just bolt over as surprises. But I just felt like the longer I spent with these people, the more multifaceted they kept seeming, and that her parents didn't turn into like the oppressive parents who are just trying to keep you on the farm. But then even beyond that level of just having more three-dimensional characters, the scenario really took me aback multiple times. So that was the kind of movie I didn't sit the whole time thinking, I love this. This is getting an A, but it's so steadily built for me that at the end of it, I just didn't want to change a single thing about that movie.
I did love the sort of omnipresent wall of a backdrop with being the volcano. I did love that sort of as a metaphor and as like a visual statement. I thought was very smart. Like the sort of everything about the world is like a fantasy of what's on the other side. But also maybe like you're saying that maybe they understand a little bit more than they think they than they let on. But yeah. I mean it was interesting. I just didn't quite connect to it. So yeah, of the things that didn't make it, my favorites are for sure Sweden's A Pigeon and Brazil's The Second Mother. So I would urge people to seek those out. And as is always the case, I don't know if this is falling on deaf ears just because, the way we all live now would makes this difficult, but when you watch a movie at home, especially if it's not a crowd-pleasing mainstream movie, it's a really good idea to turn off your phones and turn off all the lights and try to recreate the theatrical experience because it's a lot easier to be immersed in anything even slightly difficult if you pretend you're in a movie theater.
Truly do immerse,
I'm not trying to say these movies are difficult. It's just like, especially with something like A Pigeon Sat on a Branch.
Oh, for sure.
Like I almost can't imagine watching that at home. Just because the very fact that you can't escape the mise-en-scène
Totally.
is adds so much to the humor.
Also, the tracking of these reactions that are happening in the deep background of the shot,
Right,
too.
which if you're watching at home, I'm just afraid you're gonna lose all that.
But try anyway, people.
Put it on your big TV and turn off all the lights and really watch.
That's right.
I mean, I did actually had that experience with speaking of things we caught up with recently, I watched It Follows.
I know.
And I usually try to watch whatever is the most critically acclaimed horror movie of the year, even though I'm not really a big horror buff. And it was super good, and I had the similar experience with that. I'm like, in a movie theater, this would have been even better because of how much its scenario sort of makes you look at everything in the frame,
Completely.
which is, not. I'm used to horror being more, maybe because of bad horror, more about like sort of sound and surprising images.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like really patient scares,
Totally.
which sounds like it's slow, but I didn't think it was slow at all.
No, not slow at all, but you just don't know where threat might be coming from or if it's even already in the shot or, yeah.
Right, yeah. And so sometimes I would get scared and then nothing would happen.
Yeah.
So I was like, that probably happened even more in the movie.
Yeah.
Like in the movie theater.
I saw that 4 times in the theater. That's the only movie this year and probably
Wow.
a couple of years that that's been true for.
So does this mean it's one of your top 10 or something?
It's pretty high up there. I mean, it's partly that it's the kind of movie that people kept not believing me was re as good as they were hearing it was. And then I was like, I'll totally go again and prove this to you. And then and then I took a group of students to it, which they loved it. But while I was watching the movie, I realized what an iffy call that might have been. But they were fine. But yeah, just that score in the movie is incredible.
Yeah, the score is pretty great.
And there are things like the scene in the pool that I think is a theatrical experience are just jaw-dropping. But
I will say, like, for people who are longtime readers of the site, I've mentioned this theater, the Redford Theater, in Detroit. I've mentioned this a lot, because it's where I grew up, sort of loving the movies. And my parents, like, weren't big into movies, but they would go there regularly, like for the one theater, because it was always showing like old classics and things. So like that's how, and because my parents are always like, oh, modern movies are so trashy, that whole like, heavily religious home that I grew up in. So we went and saw a lot of old movies, and every other week they would show. It was only open every other week on the weekends for some reason.
Wow.
And they would always show like an old classic, and so we went quite a lot. And so that's where I fell in love with the cinema. And so like before in the like near the beginning of It Follows, before you've been given like the one of the most amazing exposition scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
Totally.
Because usually I hate exposition, but the exposition scene in this movie is so incredible. Because it's so like, what the fuck are you talking about? But he's totally telling you completely the truth,
Yeah.
Anyway, they're right before all the shit goes down, they're going to see Charade in a movie theater, and I thought to myself, like, because the scene starts in the movie theater. And I thought to myself, God, this theater looks so familiar. But the angle of the camera, I couldn't be like, why does this theater look so familiar to me? Because I somehow had not tracked that they were in Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
And anyway, so then he turns around and he thinks he sees someone, and you don't know why he's so freaked out because you haven't come to the reveal scene yet. And he's like, I gotta go, I gotta go. And so they like pick up and they run out of the theater. And then when they run out of the theater, you see the marquee and the whole theater, and it's the Redford Theater. So like, and it was like the interior was the Redford Theater as well. It was like actually where I grew up watching the movies. So seeing a scene set in there was like really exciting. And
Have
that
you
is,
seen these
Charade
other?
is just the kind of movie they would have shown there too.
Oh, have you seen? Excuse me. Have you seen The Myth of the American Sleepover? His other movie.
No,
I didn't respond to that in the same way. It's kind of a dazed and confused movie, but he's really committed to Detroit, and that movie is just as specifically Detroit set as this one is.
Yeah, because there's even some dialogue in this one that's really fun about, that we can't go,
Yeah.
past this area because, like,
Whatever mile, yeah.
I hadn't, like, of the three things I've basically seen since living in New York that I've had the most, oh my God, Detroit, were Only Lovers Left Alive, this, and 8 Mile, which came out shortly after Move to New York. Because there's in all three movies, there's like references to things or images that I saw in real life, you know?
I just barely didn't know you yet when I saw 8 Mile, which was good because I would have just confused you and Eminem.
Well, and I grew up on 6 Mile, so you know,
Yeah,
that movie
practically
was.
the same person.
So anyway, yeah. So Rent It follows and A Pigeon Sat on a Branch, because you'll probably see them on a lot of top 10 lists, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening. This has been Nathaniel from The Film Experience and Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks.
Yeah, thanks a bunch.
And we will talk to you again next week.